For marketing agencies and social media managers looking to prove the value of their work, I've got something special for you. Agora Pulse is not only Social Media Examiner's tool of choice as an all-in-one social media management tool, it also allows you to track the traffic, conversion, and revenue from every social post, comment, and private message. Learn how to prove your social media ROI with a free training or a free trial by visiting agorapulse.com/SME today. Again, agorapulse.com/SME.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Podcast, helping you navigate the social media jungle. And now, here's your host, Michael Stelzner.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining me for the Social Media Marketing Podcast, brought to you by socialmediaexaminer.com. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner, and this is the podcast for marketers and business owners who want to know what works with social media. I am super excited about today's show. I'm going to be joined by Michael Hyatt and Brian Clark from Copyblogger, and we're going to explore why these big bloggers turn their comment systems back on. Yes, they had them off for a long time, and now they have them on. We're going to talk about why. And I also have a huge bonus as I dig deep with these guys on their newest email list growth strategies, and you are not going to want to miss that. If you have any questions for me, email me at podcast@socialmediaexaminer.com. And with that, let's transition over to this week's brand new discovery.
Helping you stay alive in a social jungle, here's this week's survival tip.
This week, I'm joined by Eric Fisher. And Eric, what's your brand new discovery?
This week, I found anchor.fm.
What is it?
Okay. It is a social network where you can instantly broadcast bite-sized audio clips to the world and react to them as well.
Okay, so it's an app, right?
Yes.
And when you say broadcast bite-sized audio clips to the world, explain what you mean by that.
So what you can do is you can record using your phone 2-minute audio clips and talk about anything. You can ask questions. You can make a statement, if you will. It's almost like the 140 characters of Twitter brevity, but on steroids because it's your voice.
Okay, so hold on. So you're making a and I have used this app. It's pretty cool. You hold it up to your head just like you're on the phone. The user interface is really quite cool and simple.
Yes.
And it literally just goes beep, and then you record whatever you want to say, and then you're done. So in that regards, it's like simple, but once you're done recording this little, 1 or 2 minute or less audio clip, then what happens?
Well, then you can either tag people in the post or you can write a little description about it and leave it at that and just publish it on Anchor in and of itself. Or you can tweet it out, share it out to Facebook. You can even embed these, what they call waves, on blog posts if you want to.
So the Anchor app creates an audio file called a wave.
Yes.
And this is what's intriguing about it. At least for me, it's not like you just create a little audio clip and then you sit back and you're done. Somehow there's some sort of like integration with Twitter or something where automatically it seems as if your friends are notified that you're on Anchor. As a matter of fact, I think even a tweet goes out on Twitter that says, I recorded an Anchor. Listen to it here, right?
It's in the settings, yeah. It is integrated with Twitter in terms of finding your friends and searching your contacts on your phone. So that's why half the time, your Twitter followers are going to be the ones that find you there first. But then tweeting it out is something that you have to switch on in the settings, and then it's always an option.
It was defaulted on for me.
Yeah, and it wasn't for me.
And maybe it just depends when you download the app. But I will tell you, this is the cool part. The replies. Explain how that works.
Yeah. So then the replies, you can, once you've hit, and by the way, you don't have to be on the app to listen to someone's wave audio file. It helps because then when you're on the phone and you hit, you have listened to it, you can hit the reply button and then you have a minute that you can then respond to that person. So for example, our friend podcast answer man, Cliff Ravenscraft. He did an Ask Me Anything that he just kicked off. And so then he's got people, jumping in and asking him 1 minute questions.
See, this is where it gets intriguing. Like I've only done about three anchors or whatever the heck they call them. And lots of people end up audibly replying. And what's really cool is people can audibly reply to me or the other people that are in the thread. So when you listen back,
yes,
when you listen back to your anchor, it's like listening to a story because you hear someone respond to you. And then after that, someone might respond to that person that just responded to you. And it's just this long, interesting dialogue of different voices. And it really is kind of like an audio social network, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like if, you know how when on Twitter you can click the you still can. Anyway, you click the URL of the original tweet and then you see all the responses
right
on the way down through. It's kind of like that, but with audio.
So is this only an iOS thing or is it Android also?
For now, it is iOS only. However, they are heavily into development on getting that Android app out there. So it should be there soon.
Yeah, and I will tell folks, it's a pretty cool app. I would say it's probably one of the nicest looking interfaces I've ever seen in an app. Very, very easy onboarding process. So Eric, tell everybody where they can get the app.
Yeah, you can head on over to anchor.fm. That's anchor.fm.
Or I would imagine you could just search the App Store for the word
yes.
Anchor, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Thanks for bringing us that find, Eric.
You're welcome.
Did you know that we can deliver awesome marketing info directly into your inbox? Simply subscribe to our weekly newsletter that comes out 3 days a week. You won't miss any of the updates going on in the world of social marketing. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/get updates.
And with that, let's transition over to today's awesome interview, which I know you're going to love.
Helping you simplify your social safari, here's this week's expert guide.
I'm very excited to be joined by two experts today, Brian Clark and Michael Hyatt. If you don't know who Michael Hyatt is, he's the author of Platform and co-author of the brand new book, Living Forward, A Proven Plan to Stop Drifting and Get the Life You Want. He's also an avid blogger at michaelhyatt.com and host of the This Is Your Life podcast, which I listen to all the time. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be with you.
We're also joined by Brian Clark, who is the CEO of Rainmaker Digital. He's the founder of Copy Blogger, a blog that I used to write for a long time ago. He's also host of the Unemployable podcast and an evangelist for the Rainmaker platform. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. It's good to be here.
So today we're going to explore why these two major blogs had previously turned off their comment sections on their blog and then decided to turn them back. Now, before we get into the questions, I want to give a little context for you that are listening right now. Back in May of 2014, I had Mark Schaefer and Tim McDonald, who was with Huffington Post. He was their community manager, specifically in regards to comments, on my show to talk about the trend that big blogs were shutting down their comments. And you can check it out at socialmediaexaminer.com/92. And this was all spurred by a controversial post from Copyblogger entitled "Why We're Removing Comments on Copyblogger." And Brian published that around March of 2014. Then in January of 2015, Michael Hyatt published, "I pulled comments from my blog and here's why." So what we're going to do today is we're going to explore why these guys shut down their blog comments in the beginning and kind of what happened and then why they are now back. So Brian, let's start with you. What was the motivation back in May of 2014? March of 2014. Why did you decide to shut down the blog comments? Let's hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, first of all, I have to make an important admission here, which may be strange coming from the founder of the site and the CEO of the company, but in neither case did I decide to remove and or bring back. I really left that up to my editorial team. I thought that was the appropriate thing. But in general, the idea at the time, from my perspective, why I was able to let them make a pragmatic decision based on what they were seeing and what they felt was an experiment, was that, first of all, comments are incredibly important and they were incredibly important to me for many, many years on Copyblogger. And this is goes into what kind of content is resonating, where are people getting stuck. All of these kind of things are indispensable. And you may have noticed that when we launched our podcast network, we did have comments enabled because it was a new site and it was important to us to get that kind of feedback. But on Copyblogger, a lot of that feedback was shifting to social media. Number two, a lot of the feedback that I used in product development, which was crucial during the early years, really shifted over to our customer base. You know, as you mature as a company, you really start listening to your existing customers as opposed to those out in the wild necessarily. Mm-hmm. Because it's just, you know, I think at the time we had 150,000 customers. That's a big customer base. And it was really important for our ongoing strategy to pay attention more to them. And then finally, I will say something that is not in that post by Sonia Simone, who ultimately, I think, made the decision with the input of the rest of the editorial team. And you guys may have noticed this because you both have very popular blogs. Mike, obviously you in social media, and Michael in personal development and other aspects, actually. But we had this situation where we had what I would call the six-month class of current commenters. And this had been going on for a long time. When you publish a marketing blog, other marketers who are also seeking our audience, they use commenting as a traffic strategy. So it was almost like clockwork. You would see the same class or group of commenters. And some of the comments were really, really good, but you knew why they were doing it. And I was always highly critical of commenting as a traffic strategy. I didn't think it was the smartest use of time, but whatever. So you'd have 6 months of people showing up, leaving comments, some stupid, some thoughtful, and then they'd move on and a new group of people would come. So there was a little bit of personal annoyance because this had been going on for years. And coupled with the shift to social media and coupled with the fact that we were looking more and more to our existing customer base for feedback on development and product strategy going forward, that I was perfectly fine with the lack of comments on Copyblogger. Mm-hmm. Now, the practical reasons that editorial went with it was shift to social. That was a big one. But number two, spam. You guys both run huge sites. It's a big deal to moderate comments. And when we talk about bringing comments back, you'll see what we did to try to minimize that. But it was our thinking that from an editorial standpoint, having someone spending a significant amount of time trying to figure out, as spammers got more creative, is this a spam comment? Is it legitimate? You know, is this, you know, how much is slipping by your traditional filters that catch the obvious stuff? So it really came down to, is this important to us as a business right now? And can we carry on the conversation out there in the social media realm where we saw things shifting year after year after year, Mike, which you're familiar with? And then it was just like, should we have someone doing this work or not? And that was the basis of the decision. Now, if you remember, Sonia did try not to make it final, which was a good thing, obviously. she called it an experiment. But I guess it carried on for a year.
Yeah, I think so. Michael, how about yourself? What was your decision?
Yeah, well, similar to what Brian has shared, you know, there was kind of the empirical reason. I just noticed that the number of comments that I was getting per post on average had been going down for some time. So I decided to go in and do a little research on my blog. And I found out, for example, in 2011, I was averaging about 195 comments per post.
Which is still crazy. I mean, that's so high. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's so high. It was just, you know, I had a very engaged community. And then in 2012, while my traffic's going up, mind you, it dropped to 179. And then my traffic went up again. And then I would get 114. And then my traffic had a huge jump in 2014. It was up like 74% over 2013. But my comments dropped down to about 62 per post. So like Brian, I noticed that a lot of it was moving to social. I was trying to keep up with the growth myself. And I'm just thinking, by the way, I read Greg McKeown's book, Essentialism. And I thought, you know, I got to just pare some stuff back. And I was seeing all the same spam that Brian was talking about, you know, people that were obvious spammers, people that were not so obvious, people that were hunting traffic and all that stuff. And I just got tired of spending so much of my day doing that. And kind of the final straw for me, I've used and frankly I'm currently using Disqus as my commenting platform. But they started injecting into the comment feed ads.
Yep.
And there was no way at that point to turn it off. And that just was like the final straw. I just said, you know what? I've had it. And so I turned them off. I wrote a post. I gave all my rationale. But honestly, a lot of it was me just trying to find bandwidth to do what I needed to do.
Gotcha. And it's intriguing because at the time, Michael, your team was, I'm sure, very small, smaller than they are now, right? So you represent kind of the one-man blogger who's out there who has to run a business and is an entrepreneur. And Brian represents the bigger company that has a team. But you both kind of came to the same conclusion that, at least for now, this was not a wise move. So I'm curious, how did your community respond? Brian, let me start with you because, you know, obviously – they couldn't respond on the blog comment. What was the response from your customers and communities once you guys made this decision?
Well, we immediately shipped, and I should note, it was 2 years almost that comments were gone, which wow. makes more sense. So number one, I knew that I wasn't expecting any sort of business impact by this decision. Like, I was not worried that our sales were going to tank or anything. In fact, that year we grew 30%. We've added $5 million in revenue, you know, while comments were gone. So I didn't see it as a business impact thing. But we did shift at the time when Google Plus was still viable, basically. We shifted over there. And so we did get to hear from people and what they thought. And some people got it, and some people understood but didn't like it. And then there was a very vocal group of people who took the opportunity to bring attention to themselves by saying that we were ruining everything and that we were doomed as a business. And it was just, same thing happened when we killed the Facebook page. You know, it's just, we're pretty good at understanding our business, so we weren't worried about that. But we did kind of wonder if we were losing something more intangible by not having comments on the post. And our thinking at the time was no, that the conversation could continue. We were already paying attention in all these social outposts and monitoring and moderating comments. So it just seemed to us that we were streamlining and we were going in the direction that online was evolving to.
Michael, I'm going to ask for what your community responded to, but first I want to let you know that the blogging community was shocked because being a member of that community in you being one of the bigger blogs in the community, they were in uproar in podcast after podcast and blog post after blog post was written asking the question, is it a blog without comments, you know? And, you know, you would have some people saying, well, look, Seth Godin has been doing it for years, right? And,
right.
And all that kind of argument. But it really was a shock to the community. A lot of people followed your lead, Brian. Michael, what was the response? What was your community response once you shut it down?
Well, I had certainly some people that were upset. Not very many. I've been graced to have people that are very respectful. And so at least I wasn't seeing much outrage. I saw people with honest questions about it. The biggest thing I saw was confusion. People didn't know what to do now. You know, they wanted to be engaged, but there was really no outlet for it. So some people tried to post on Facebook, and some people tried to post on Twitter, and a few posted on LinkedIn. But because there was no central hub, there was no place that gave the community kind of a center of focus. And I thought that was really disruptive to the community. You know, I really believe what my buddy Stu McLaren says is that people come for content, but they stay for community. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe some people it really doesn't matter to, but the people that are the most engaged, that buy the most stuff from me, it mattered to them. And I found that for me, it was actually worse than trying to manage the comments that were on my blog. Because now I had to go to three or four different places to try to you know, be responsive to the conversation. And I do want to engage. I mean, I don't engage with every comment. You know, I can't. But I do want to be part of that community. You know, I want to be, you know, somebody that engages with people and learns from people and has something to share back and, you know, be reflective of what I've written. And I couldn't do that very well with it so dispersed over all these different platforms.
So about a year, in your case, Michael, about a year after shutting down the blog comments, you wrote a post called Why I Brought Comments Back. So let's get into this a little bit. And along the way, you discovered that Brian, that Copyblogger, had brought comments back as well. But why don't you share, if you can, from your recollection as to why you decided to go ahead and shift things and turn it back on?
Yeah, so I was doing a little bit of a postmortem on my traffic for 2015. And the truth is, this was the first year since I started blogging back in 2004 that my blog traffic had not grown. It was absolutely flat. I don't think comments were the only driver, but I definitely believe it had an impact. Another driver was that I reduced the number of posts that I was doing per week. So I said, we got to fix both of those. And so we did. So we brought back comments, and I went back from two posts a week to three posts a week. The other thing I discovered, though, is that after I brought them back, I had so many people tell me, they said, you know what? I just stopped dropping by. You know, it just seemed like it was this automated thing, and it just didn't feel hospitable. It felt cold and sterile and uninviting, and I just didn't feel like I had a place there anymore, so I stopped coming. And interestingly, since I added them back, my traffic is now back growing again, and I'm up 20% over the same period last year.
Wow. So do you attribute it, some, like it injected a little bit of life and other voices to your content that maybe was missing, you think?
Yes, I think it created some vitality on the blog, and it just felt like somebody was home. Mm. You know, it wasn't just me doing a post and run, but I'm there and I'm engaged. And, you know, my company's bigger now. I've got 15 people full time. And they do a lot of stuff, but the things that I've kept, one of the things I've kept is responding to the comments.
That's awesome.
And I think it's been totally, totally worth it.
Now, have people stopped commenting on the other social networks because they know there's a place that they can comment on your blog? Or are you also finding that's happening as well?
No, they're still commenting there, I think, just as much. But they're usually commenting about what they should comment about, and that's whatever I posted there. Mm-hmm. And not about, you know, something that happened on the blog. Now, I do post about the blog post on social media, and occasionally they'll comment there, but usually the bulk of the commenting is happening on the blog now.
And you use the DISQUS, discuss comment system, right?
Yes.
And did that address some of the concerns that you had previously? Because I know you shut it down because of that very same technology, right?
Yeah. So now you can turn the ads off, which is great. So I didn't want the ads anymore so that I could turn those off. And then in addition to that, it seems like it has much better spam control. You know, I get comments that are quarantined every day, and I've been amazed at how accurate they've been. They seem to pick up the subtleties of spammers' tactics now. And so I really, that has not been an issue.
So what month did your comments come back, Michael?
January.
January. Okay. And Brian, when did you turn your comments back on, and what was the motivation?
Yeah, so I think it was also January because it coincided with the new redesign of Copyblogger. So it's funny, a lot of the things Michael said are very touchy-feely in a good way. And that's exactly where we came from because, again, I could not trace any of our business metrics that matter to us. You know, our traffic plateaued as well. But we were converting so many more people to email due to a new approach, and that's what really matters to us. So again, I didn't see an impact there. But when Pamela Wilson came on board working with us, she came on first doing some freelance work and then accepted a full-time position. And that initial role became you're now in charge of Copyblogger, which has been a role that several people in our kind of senior management have taken that on. It's almost like a trial by fire. But, you know, Pamela had been writing for us for years as a guest writer, promoting her own business, you know, much like you did, Mike, back in the day.
Right.
And it was her perspective. So I really, as everyone kind of knows, I don't write like I used to. It used to be Brian's blog, and then I wanted it to become bigger than me. And I think to a certain degree that's been successful. And that's kind of why I abstained on both occasions from making the decision. But Pamela came to me and she said, you know what, as a writer, as someone who still writes for the blog, not just manages it, I just miss the comments. I miss the interaction. Mm-hmm. I miss the feedback, even if it's not crucial to product development or business decisions, because we know our audience pretty well. But I like it, you know? And I was like, okay, my only qualification here is that you have to explain why we're bringing them back. And she did. If you go read that post, it's very much.
Do you remember what the name of it is? I tried to find it. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I think it was also in the redesign post from January.
Okay.
I could pull that up for you later.
Okay.
But,
I've got it.
Yeah, it was a very touchy feely in a very good way, because that's intangible stuff matters. It really does. And I tend to be very logical and kind of hard nosed about things. But I get it, you know, and frankly, I kind of miss the comments. So that's a very squishy way to put something. But I think everyone's kind of happy with it. You know, editorial does deal with comment moderation and spam again. But we made the move of leaving comments only open for 7 days, because what we discovered during the interim when they were closed was that a lot of that spam was coming in on old posts. And what we missed were comments on new posts, right? Like you don't really feel the same way about a late comment on a 3-year-old post, but you know, what's published this week and what's the feedback and what are the nuances that the audience is picking up on? We missed that a lot. And ultimately I think we made the right decision.
Michael, you have the title of that post handy?
Yeah. Sorry. I just bounced off it again, but we get it.
Okay. So go ahead.
It was called That Was Then, This Is Now, Welcome to the New Copy Blogger website.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. So, Brian, what was the response from the audience once the comments came back?
Good. They were like, thank you.
I mean, did they start writing like crazy? Was there all of a sudden like this threat, comments?
I don't know. It like always, it depends on,
right.
on the headline.
Well, I
the
guess
topic,
anything is more than what it was before, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And to Michael's point earlier, we were always already paying attention to all the social media outposts. I mean, we always did that in addition to the centralized comments. So that was part of the workflow. When we removed them, it really did free up some resources. But we feel like we've got a happy medium here. So yes, just like Michael, we realize that you can't ignore any social media platform where your audience is.
Right.
So that's still part of the job, and it's still important. But it is nice. It is nice to have the comments back.
Mike, go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to say, this is kind of interesting. On the post where I said why I brought comments back, I got 485 comments.
That's crazy.
And people were just so positive, and also told me a lot of what I had wished I could have heard after I shut it down. But there was no way for them to really tell me that. It wasn't an easy way to tell me that.
Right.
But it's just a whole study, if you look at all those comments, as to why you shouldn't, at least for me, why I shouldn't have pulled comments to begin with.
Well, and I think in your case in particular, if you are a personal brand like you are, Michael Hyatt, it's very hard for people to reach you, right? And you have gates set up all around you to protect yourself. So this gives people a chance to interact with you in a really cool way, right?
Absolutely. That whole accessibility thing, you know, it's something you have to watch as a personality blogger, because, you know, I've got 24 hours in the day and I've got a big right. family and other things that I'm pursuing, and I want to be faithful to those commitments as well. But there's got to be some way for people to get access, and this is one of the ways that they can do it. And it's good for me, too. You know, I need that feedback, and I enjoy it, like Brian was talking about. I just, you know, I love getting the feedback. But it also sharpens my own thinking, because there's things that I missed or things that I need to reconsider, and this gives a way for me to grow from the experience.
Well, I would imagine there's also questions that come up that spawn new blog posts. Am I right?
Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely.
And that was invaluable too. Again, when you talk about feedback for content strategy, feedback for product development, I mean, that's why we were so careful to say, don't copy us. you are not Copyblogger. You know, not even every big site. I am an advocate for all news sites to eliminate comments. I mean, have you ever had that moment where you go, why am I reading the comments? It's just horrible. But
they're horrible. Ugh.
But for sites like ours, and it's interesting to me that Michael and I have very different approaches. I mean, Michael is the brand. And while I have a personal brand, I've always wanted Rainmaker Digital, Copyblogger even, to be bigger than myself. And yet, I think we came to the same conclusion, even though we have very different ideologies about what the business is built around. You know, it still mattered that people had that ability to respond.
Michael, have there been any other like unexpected positive consequences of turning on the comments? Like one thing that comes to mind is just people seeing you respond to other people sends a statement to the world on those blog posts that I think is a positive one because it shows that you're human and you're there and accessible. But have there been any other kind of unintended benefits as a result of turning it back on?
Well, I can't really think of any other than what you just said. I just think it humanizes me as a writer. I think it makes the whole site feel warmer and it feels like somebody's at home.
Right.
You know, as opposed to, you know, the lights are on, but nobody's at home. And now it looks like, you know, I've invited people over for a dinner or something. And I'm there as a host and, you know, I'm listening to what they have to say. You know, it is interesting to me, and I don't have a good answer for this, but, you know, while my traffic plateaued last year, the size of my mailing list doubled. So that is a curious thing to me. Like Brian was basically talking about a similar kind of phenomenon, and email is really important to me. But I think traffic is also important, and engaging with people is also important in terms of building my overall brand.
I think so. I mean, I think I also think we shouldn't underestimate the social signals that we're sending Google, perhaps. And Brian, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but do you think Google is looking to see whether or not there's slight alterations to these posts in the comment section and whether there's anything at work here?
Well, we certainly didn't see any dip search traffic. I think there is a social component, social proof more than anything else.
There you go. Go ahead and explain that one to people.
Yeah, because when you see a post with 77 comments or 495, I think if we would have titled our post specifically about comments, we would have got more specific, but it was buried within the redesign aspect of it. But regardless, it is a signal of whether or not I should invest my time in this. And it's the funny way that we human beings are and how we make decisions and process information. But when the comments were gone, I got to think maybe that was the thing that might have impacted both our traffic and Michael's because they did not have that signal. Now, of course, Twitter took away the count also, and we were all upset about that because that's another signal of shareability and popularity. So I think, you know, without that comment count, which is generally up there above the headline, people are lacking one key cue as to whether or not this is worth my time.
I want to both of you have teased or hinted at that you've radically increased your email acquisition. And I want to start with you, Brian, because you mentioned that you had some new approach to email that you hinted at least at it. And I think I heard that properly, maybe about 10 minutes ago. What is your new approach or what is the approach that you've been using to grow your email list? And then Michael, I'd love to hear whatever techniques you're using as well, because I think people might find that interesting.
Sure.
Yeah, it's actually 3 years old now almost. But we shifted from an opt-in or subscribe to our newsletter type approach, and we shifted to a access and registration approach, meaning we repurposed a bunch of our, you know, evergreen content on our cornerstone topics into really nice ebooks, and then we built this content library that's basically a membership area. It's free, but you register instead of opt-in. And there's actually a Marketing Sherpa case study done on that change that we did in 2013 because our opt-in rate went up 400%. So we've been evolving from there. Now we're doing offering free courses. We actually launched our Rainmaker platform. I mean, this is like our flagship product on a repurposed audio course. Started as a podcast, turn it into a course. And we're really finding that, you know, whether you want to call them lead magnets or ethical bribe or whatever the case may be, that the game has been upped, especially in a competitive field like content marketing. So that has been our results. And I could go on and on about the concept of access. I can get really philosophical about why that is. But in short, that's the way the web works. If you want anything good online, whether it be Gmail or Facebook or Twitter or a free app, a freemium app, you have to register to get access. And if you don't, you don't have the promised experience. So that's what we've been trying to emulate. The way people actually use the web has been altered, I think, in the last 5 years by social media. If you don't register for Facebook, you don't get to participate. If you don't log in, you don't get to have the experience.
So just so I'm clear, instead of saying get my newsletter, you're saying get this, get access to whatever this is, right?
And yeah, the first thing was the library of ebooks. Then we shifted to an online course approach. And you'll even see that on my personal project, Unemployable, it's got that same concept of...
There's a newsletter that comes along with that. It's just not what the offer is. Is that the point?
It's interesting because when you're doing curation, which I've become fascinated with two projects that don't really make money, but it's how I learn new things. But in that regard, the email is the thing, as opposed to, oh yeah, also sign up for our marketing newsletter so we can spam you. It's an issue of perception, I think.
I see.
But even then, I'm experimenting right now on Unemployable with, you can get the newsletter in this free course, or you can just get the newsletter. And I think the implication there is, of course, you want the newsletter. It's just up to you whether or not you want this bonus as well.
Hmm. How about you, Michael? What have you been doing to grow your newsletter list? Because it sounds like you've done it successfully.
Yeah, we grew actually about 120% this last year. And it really came down to what we did in conjunction with our product launches. So we created some incredible lead magnets, or as Brian was saying, ethical bribes. And we really tried to be creative with those and create stuff that had enormous value. So like one of the most successful ones we did was back in December in conjunction with my 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever product launch. We created this thing called the Life Score Assessment, which enabled people to score themselves in the 10 domains of life and come up with one score that represented how they're doing in life. People love that stuff. Hmm. And so we got 40,000 opt-ins just on that one little tool.
How did you actually get people to opt in? Was it just random visitors to your website?
Facebook ads.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so we ran that on all kinds of Facebook ads. We uploaded, you know, a segment of my email list and did lookalike audience kind of stuff. Wow. Of course, we had affiliates in that promotion too, so they were mailing to their audiences as well. We did another opt-in that we actually recycled from last year, and it was one where we went to about 20 high-profile personal development people, and we said, how do you set yourself up for your best year ever? And so they each gave us about a paragraph. We summarized all that, put it into 8 points, created a PDF, and we got about 80,000 opt-ins to that.
Wow.
And so it was just
amazing.
A steady stream of those.
We're just now starting to experiment with Facebook ads. I know the error, 10 years of saying you don't need advertising. But it's results like that that are really too compelling to pass up. Michael, are you willing to share what your opt-in conversion cost was for that?
Yeah, we were – now understand that this was all part of a lead funnel that led to the sale of a product.
Right. So you were going to get a positive ROI, you hope.
Yeah. So let me just give you the life score assessment. I just gave a presentation on this recently, so I'll give you the exact numbers. So we had 40,331 opt-ins. We ended up spending – let me just stick here. We sold 1,890 copies of the Best Year Ever course for a total of $437,000. So that was the revenue. And we ended up buying about $42,000 worth of Facebook ads to generate that.
That's not bad at all.
So I will do that all day long.
And that is revenue directly attributed to the Facebook advertising, or is that the total revenue for the entire campaign?
No, that's just for that one opt-in magnet. That was the top of the funnel, and that was just tracking those people who opted into the life score assessment.
Wow.
And the products that just...
You realize some people's minds are getting blown. They think this is a podcast on blogging comments.
Yeah, we thought we were talking about comments here. Now we're getting serious.
That is so cool. So what do you do with all those 40,000 people when it's all said and done? You still nurture them with your normal content off your blog, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. So I should have said that. So when people opt into our opt-ins, we also tell them, we're very upfront about this, is that they're going to opt into the normal, you know, newsletter stuff and get all my blog posts as they come off. And so then what we do, we use an Infusionsoft. So then we quarantine them for about a period of 30 days, which means we can't promote to them. And I don't know if that's the right length. We're kind of experimenting with that. But where we really want to nurture them, and we have a sequence of, you know, that goes to them with our best content over the course of that 30 days. But during that time, we can't promote anything else to them. They're just quarantined. And then the ones that come out of that, now we feel like we've got the relationship and we've built the trust and we can start selling.
That's amazing. Any thoughts on that, Brian? You think that's it's a winning philosophy?
No, I mean, we're experimenting with stuff right now that's very similar to that. That's interesting feedback from you, Michael, on the quarantine, because there's a lot of conventional wisdom that would say the first 30 days, and that's a more of a internet marketing, more aggressive ideology of you got to sell to them in the first 30 days or they won't convert. And I think that's probably wrong, depending on how you execute. You know,
yeah. I mean, you mean the conventional philosophy is wrong, not necessarily what Michael's doing, right? Is that what you
No,
mean?
I think Michael's probably got it right.
Yes.
And I suspect that the nurturing content is also subtly preparing them to buy, if I know him.
Well, you know, and let's be honest. I mean, I think that, Michael, you do a great job, but you have very aggressive campaigns. So it is in your best interest, I would imagine, to give them a little bit of break from any promotions and allow them to have some great content, because we also do very aggressive campaigns for social media marketing world. And we know that if we just did this all the time, no one would ever want to stay on our list, right?
Exactly right. I think you got to add value before you try to extract value.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole idea behind content marketing. It's, you know, know, like, and trust, then offer.
Yep.
Okay, so in the last few minutes, I want each of you to tell us about what your latest project is. Michael, let's start with you.
Yeah, so my latest project is this new book that's just hot off the press called Living Forward, A Proven Plan to Stop Drifting and Get the Life You Want. And it's basically a book on how to create a life plan. But got endorsements from Seth Godin and Tony Robbins and Patrick Lencioni and a bunch of folks. And right now, as I'm talking, it's number 77 on Amazon. We had it up as high as number 4 on Amazon overall. And it still hasn't been released yet as we're recording this. It's still in pre-order phase. But it's been fun. This is something that's really I'm passionate about. And people can find out more at livingforwardbook.com.
Livingforwardbook.com. Awesome. And Brian, you got any special projects you want to talk about?
Yeah, our newest thing we actually launched in the fall, but we're really starting to accelerate. It's called Digital Commerce Institute at digitalcommerce.com. And you're going to appreciate this, Mike, because you were part of my rationale,
oh,
I think, a year ago of why we decided. Now, this is an online academy training program and our live Digital Commerce Summit, which will be October in Denver. So this is all about digital entrepreneurism, creating products and services that are purely digital as opposed to e-commerce or service, you know, professional services or something like that. And that's what I kind of realized, that that's what Rainmaker Digital is. We're a digital commerce company. Just about everything except for our live events is, you know, it's created, delivered, marketed, supported all digitally. And the realization really came to me after putting on our second version of our own content marketing conference. And it was a great success and it was awesome. But I started to think, you know what? Stelzner owns social media marketing for his show. And Joe Paluzzi owns content marketing because, you know, that was his thing. And we joined in because I was talking about content marketing before he got started, but I didn't call it that, right? And I said, so what do we really own? And that was the idea for Digital Commerce Institute. And it's been phenomenal because I think we found our thing. And I have some really ambitious plans go forward. But, you know, first year, awesome. We got to get the new event out and grow from there. And
you got a URL you want to send people to?
Yeah, actually, digitalcommerce.com/register is a free taste, if you will. You'll get access to some of our paid courses, the initial lessons, some of our case study webinars, and stuff like that. And we are just about to start experimenting with Facebook ads for that free membership. And so I'm going to be stealing some of Hyatt's ideas.
Michael Hyatt, first of all, thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mike.
Brian Clark, thank you for joining me. Us.
Oh, always a pleasure, Mike.
You guys were incredible. I know that a lot of people are going to be hitting that rewind button if there is such a thing on their podcast player. Thank you guys both for your time and have a wonderful day.
You bet.
Thanks.
Was that awesome or was that awesome? See, I told you it was going to be awesome. Hey, if there was anything we mentioned in today's show and you just didn't catch it because you're on the go, don't worry. We take all the notes for you at socialmediaexaminer.com/191. Stands for episode 191. And if you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. I don't want you to miss the amazing future podcast episodes we have lined up for you. And with that, I want to thank you so much for joining me. And I forgot my typical close. Oh, here we go. This brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Social Media Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner. I'll be back with you in the driver's seat next week. And I hope you make the absolute best out of your day. And may social media continue to change your world.
The Social Media Marketing Podcast is a production of Social Media Examiner.
Want more good stuff? Sign up for our top-notch social marketing newsletter. We deliver it straight into your inbox 3 days a week. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates.